A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. Ezra's first birthday is coming up, and Daniel's been deep in logistics lately because of an apartment move. Euroboxes, the whole thing. He's leaned into the bet. He bought Ezra a toy shipping container and a model forklift, but the one thing he couldn't find to complete the gift was a high-vis jacket in baby sizes, which, as it turns out, nobody sells. So he's asking, if he can get his hands on reflective fabric, how does he actually cut and sew it into something a one-year-old can wear? Maybe even print the kid's name on it so Ezra can operate his toy forklift in proper PPE.
I love everything about this. A one-year-old forklift operator who needs a safety vest, and the entire global safety supply chain has failed him.
The world's smallest regulatory gap. And Daniel, who by his own admission has never cut fabric in his life, is now staring down an industrial textile engineering problem because the bit demands it.
The bit demands it. That's the thing. This isn't a parent being paranoid about visibility at the playground. This is a man who bought a toy shipping container and realized the joke only lands if the operator is wearing Hy-V.
That's where it gets genuinely interesting. Because you can't just buy a baby Hy-Vis jacket. And the reason you can isn't nobody thought of it. It's that the entire safety certification framework breaks down when you try to scale it to a 12-month-old.
ANSI/ISEA 17, which is the standard that governs high-visibility safety apparel in the EU, is built around adult torso dimensions. The minimum reflective surface area, the stripe placement geometry, the chromaticity requirements for the background fabric, all of it assumes a body that is simply not 25 centimeters from shoulder to waist.
Daniel's absurd birthday gift is actually a case study in how safety standards encode assumptions about bodies, and what happens when you push those assumptions to their edge.
The edge here is a one-year-old named Ezra who needs to operate a toy forklift at walking speed in a living room. The actual safety benefit is zero, but the engineering question, can you even make a compliant toddler vest, turns out to be fascinating.
We're going to walk through this. What reflective fabric actually exists? Why glass bead and microprismatic are different beasts? What happens when you try to cut and sew this stuff? And whether you can print a name on it without destroying the reflectivity?
Then the bigger question, what does it reveal that you literally cannot make an ANSI-compliant vest for a child? Not because it wouldn't work, but because the standard's geometry makes it mathematically impossible.
A one-year-old's torso has about 0.08 square meters of surface area. ANSI 17 Class 2 requires a minimum of 0.14 square meters of reflective material. You're 43% short before you've even picked up the scissors.
The standard assumes a body that simply doesn't exist below a certain size. And nobody noticed because nobody asked for toddler Hy-Vis until a dad with a sense of humor and a toy forklift comes along.
Let's dig into what Daniel's actually up against.
The first thing Daniel's going to run into is that you can buy reflective fabric. It's not classified or anything, but almost all of it is sold with industrial garment manufacturing in mind. We're talking 1,000-yard minimums, heat-activated adhesive backings that require a commercial press, and technical spec sheets that assume you already know what a retroreflective coefficient is.
Which Daniel absolutely does not.
Which he does not. But here's what he'd actually need. Reflective fabric comes in two families. Glass bead fabric, that's the classic stuff, microscopic glass spheres about 50 to 100 microns across, embedded in a resin coating. Light enters the sphere, refracts through it, hits the reflective backing, and bounces back toward the source. The workhorse product is 3M Scotchlite 8910 series. It's flexible, breathable, and you can sew through it with a regular machine. The trade-off is angular performance. At 40 degrees off-axis, you're down to about 20% efficiency.
The other family?
Tiny pyramid structures, three perpendicular faces per prism, total internal reflection like a corner cube. 3M 9830 series is the big name here. 90% efficiency at 0 degrees, still holding 60% at 40 degrees, dramatically better off axis. but it's about 3 times stiffer than glass bead fabric, which matters enormously when your end user is a waddling 1-year-old who needs to bend at the waist.
Daniel's choosing between fabric that works better when you're directly in the headlights, or fabric that keeps working when you're not, but feels like cardboard.
Neither option solves his actual procurement problem. What he needs is sew-on, reflective fabric in half-yard quantities, not a roll of heat-activated industrial material that requires a $1,000 press. Specialty suppliers like Seattle Fabrics or Rocky Woods will sell glass bead fabric by the yard, but the inventory is inconsistent and the minimums vary. The microprismatic stuff is even harder to find in small cuts. It's almost exclusively B2B.
He can theoretically get the raw material, but the supply chain isn't set up for a guy making one tiny vest for a birthday party.
And then there's the color problem. ANSI 107 requires the background fabric to hit specific fluorescent chromaticity coordinates. It's not enough to be orange. It has to be the exact orange defined in the standard. Most craft store fabric sold as safety orange is fashion orange. Under a spectrophotometer, it wouldn't pass. And finding fabric in those exact ANSI colors, in a weight and weave appropriate for a toddler garment, in a quantity smaller than a bolt, that's 3 constraints that basically eliminate every off-the-shelf option.
Even if Daniel sources the reflective strips, the vest itself won't be ANSI-compliant orange. He'll have a reflective garment that looks like safety gear, but technically isn't.
That's before we even get to the pattern. There is no commercial pattern for a toddler safety vest. The pattern industry, Simplicity, McCall's, the big names, they assume adult workwear on one end and children's costume play on the other. A functional high-vis vest for a 12-month-old doesn't exist as a pattern category because nobody has ever needed one. The closest you'd find is a toddler construction worker costume, which is designed to look like safety gear, not perform like it.
Daniel's looking at 3 separate failures of the market. The fabric isn't sold in his quantity, the colors aren't certified for his use case, and the pattern doesn't exist. And all 3 failures trace back to the same root. The standards assume an adult body, and the entire supply chain is built around that assumption.
Glass beads don't care how tall you are. The physics is the physics. It's the regulatory and commercial ecosystem around the physics that breaks down. Let's talk about what's actually happening inside those 2 materials, because the physics is where the trade-offs get real. Glass bead fabric, the Scotchlight 8910, uses spheres about 50 to 100 microns across. Incoming light enters the bead, refracts at the curved surface, travels through the glass, hits a reflective coating on the back hemisphere, and returns through the same path out. It's elegant, it's cheap to manufacture, and the fabric remains flexible because the beads are discrete points embedded in resin rather than a continuous rigid layer.
The catch is that off-axis light doesn't hit the back coating at the right angle, so the brightness falls off a cliff.
20% efficiency at 40 degrees. That's the number. If you're a road worker and a truck is approaching from an angle, glass bead fabric still works, but it's not optimal. Microprismatic flips the mechanism entirely. Instead of spheres, you've got tiny corner cube reflectors. 3 perpendicular faces that bounce light through total internal reflection. No reflective coating needed, just geometry. A photon enters, bounces off all 3 faces in sequence, and exits parallel to its entry path. The efficiency at 0 degrees is 90%, and at 40 degrees you're still at 60.
The microprismatic vest is the one that lights up like a Christmas tree, no matter where the headlights are coming from.
And that sounds like the obvious winner until you remember that the end user here cannot walk in a straight line and spend significant time on all 4s. Microprismatic fabric is stiff, 3 times stiffer than glass bead, by 3M's own spec sheets. It doesn't drape, it doesn't fold easily, and if you wrap it around a toddler torso that's constantly bending, twisting, and collapsing onto the floor, you've created a tiny exoskeleton that fights every movement.
The crawling test. Nobody at 3M is running the crawling test.
And that's the thing. For an adult standing upright on a road crew, stiffness is a minor comfort issue. For a 12-month-old, it's the difference between wearing the vest and screaming until someone takes it off.
Which brings us to the backing problem. Daniel's not just picking between bead and prism, he's picking between attachment methods, and most of what's available is wrong for his use case.
The vast majority of reflective fabric sold by the yard comes with a heat-activated adhesive backing. It's designed to be pressed onto a base garment at 300-plus degrees with industrial equipment, a hydraulic heat press, not a home iron. The adhesive melts, bonds to the fabric, and you get a permanent reflective patch. This is how safety vest manufacturers do it. For Daniel, it's useless. He doesn't have a heat press, he's not bonding to a polyester shell fabric in a production line, and he needs something he can actually work with on a dining table.
He needs sew-on.
He needs sew-on, which is a much smaller category. Sew-on reflective fabric exists. 3M makes it, other manufacturers make it, but it's typically sold to niche markets, outdoor gear makers, costume designers, people modifying motorcycle jackets. The minimum order quantities are lower, but the availability is spotty. You might find half a yard of Scotchlite 8910 sew-on from a specialty supplier 1 month and nothing the next. And the price per yard is higher because you're paying for the convenience of not buying a 1,000-yard industrial roll.
Peel and stick? The stuff you could theoretically just press on with an iron?
That's a different product category entirely. Reflective heat transfer vinyl, which we'll get to for the name printing. But for the structural reflective strips on the vest itself, peel and stick fabric with a low temperature adhesive that activates with a home iron is basically non-existent in ANSI-grade material. It exists for craft glitter vinyl. It does not exist for Scotchlite.
Daniel's procurement path, if he's serious, is hunt down a half yard of sew-on glass bead reflective fabric from a specialty outdoor supplier, except that it might take 3 weeks and cost $25 plus shipping, and pray they have stock.
Then he faces the color problem, which might actually be the funniest part of this whole exercise. ANSI 107 defines three acceptable fluorescent background colors, lime yellow, orange, and red, and specifies exact chromaticity coordinates for each. These are not casual color names. The standard defines them in CIE 1931 color space, with X and Y coordinates and minimum luminance factors. A fabric either hits those numbers under a spectrophotometer or it doesn't.
The fabric sold at Joanne as safety orange is not hitting those numbers.
Almost certainly not. Fashion orange is warmer, redder, less fluorescent. It looks bright to the eye, but under the specific measurement conditions ANSI requires, Illuminate D65, the standard daylight spectrum, it falls short. The fluorescent component is what matters. ANSI orange isn't just bright, it's actively converting UV light into visible orange, which is why it seems to glow. Craft fabric uses cheaper dyes that don't fluoresce at the same intensity.
Even if Daniel finds a toddler t-shirt in what looks like high-vis lime, it's almost certainly not the actual ANSI lime.
Here's the kicker. Baby clothing manufacturers don't use ANSI-compliant fluorescent dyes because there's no reason to. The dyes are more expensive, they have different wash-fastness properties, and the regulatory pathway for children's clothing already has enough chemical restrictions without adding industrial fluorescent colorants to the mix. The overlap between fabric safe for baby skin and fabric meeting ANSI 107 chromaticity is a Venn diagram with basically no intersection.
Which means Daniel's vest, no matter how carefully he sources the reflective strips, will be a garment with ANSI-grade reflectivity on a non-ANSI background. It'll work, the beads will bounce light back just fine, but it won't be certifiable.
That's the distinction that matters. Safety versus certifiably safe. The reflective performance is real. The physics doesn't care about the label. But the entire institutional apparatus of safety, the standards bodies, the procurement contracts, the liability insurance, it all runs on certification, not on physics. Daniel can build something that works. He cannot build something that passes. We know the materials exist and we know the certification is impossible. But Daniel's actual question was, how do I cut and sew this thing? And that's where the pattern problem gets almost comical.
The pattern problem being that there isn't one.
There isn't one, and the reason there isn't one goes deeper than nobody's designed it. ANSI 1.7 specifies where reflective stripes must sit on the torso, shoulder to waist, with a minimum stripe width of 50 millimeters. On an adult, that's straightforward geometry. On a 12-month-old whose entire torso is roughly 25 centimeters from shoulder to waist, a single 50 millimeter stripe eats 20% of the available real estate. Two stripes, and you've used 40% before you've even accounted for spacing.
The standard stripe placement assumes a canvas that doesn't exist below a certain body size. You're not scaling a pattern. You're trying to paint a mural on a postage stamp.
And then you hit the surface area requirement we mentioned earlier. 0.14 square meters of reflective material for Class 2. A toddler vest has roughly 0.08 square meters of total surface area. Even if you covered the entire garment in reflective fabric, front and back and sides, you'd still be 43% short. The standard makes compliance mathematically impossible, not just practically difficult.
That's the thing that gets me. It's not that making a toddler vest is hard. It's that the standard was written in a way that didn't even leave room for the question.
That's not a flaw in the standard. It's a reflection of what the standard is for. ANSI 1-7 was designed for occupational safety, road workers, flaggers, emergency responders. The smallest body it contemplates is a small adult, because the labor market it regulates doesn't include 12-month-olds. Nobody at ISIA sat down and said, let's exclude toddlers. They just never had a reason to ask whether the geometry scaled down.
Until a dad with a toy forklift and a commitment to the bit came along.
Here's what Daniel actually does if he wants to build this thing, certification aside. Start with a onesie or a toddler t-shirt in the brightest fluorescent lime you can find. It won't be ANSI certified, but visually it'll read as Hy-Vis. Use that as your base garment. Don't try to pattern a vest from scratch. The onesie already fits, and fitting is the hardest part of garment construction.
He's modifying, not making.
He buys the reflective fabric, half a yard of Scotchlight, 8910 so on, glass bead, about $25 from a specialty supplier if he can find stock. Cuts it into 2-inch wide strips. That's 50 millimeters, matching the ANSI minimum width even if the placement can't comply. Then he uses a zigzag stitch with UV-resistant polyester thread to attach the strips. Zigzag, not straight stitch, because reflective fabric doesn't stretch and the onesie does. A stray stitch would pop the first time Ezra bends over.
The pattern for the strips.
An X across the chest, an X across the back, plus horizontal bands at the waist and shoulders. That approximates the ANSI configuration at reduced scale. It won't meet the standard geometrically, but it puts reflective material at the key visual points, shoulders, waist, center mass. From a distance, it'll read as a safety vest. The retroreflective performance will be real, even if the certification isn't.
The vest itself is a modified onesie with sewn-on blast bead strips in an X pattern. What about the name? Daniel mentioned printing Ezra's name on it.
This is actually the easiest part of the whole project, and it's where the materials ecosystem is surprisingly friendly to DIY. Reflective heat transfer vinyl, HTV, exists, and it's good. Cesar Easyweed. Reflective is the most accessible brand. It uses the same glass bead technology as industrial fabric, just embedded in a thermoplastic polyurethane carrier layer instead of a resin coating on woven backing.
It's the same physics in a different form factor.
Same physics, different application method. You cut the name on a Cricut or Silhouette machine. These are consumer cutting plotters, about the size of a home printer, and they're common enough that Daniel can probably borrow one or use one at a makerspace. A 12 by 12 sheet of reflective HTV runs about $8. Mirror the text, cut it, weed out the excess vinyl, and apply with a heat press at 305 degrees Fahrenheit for 15 seconds.
If Daniel doesn't have a heat press.
A home iron can work, but it's fussier. The temperature control is less precise, the pressure is uneven, and reflective HTV is less forgiving than standard vinyl, because the glass beads can get crushed if you overpress. Crushed beads don't retroreflect. They scatter light instead of returning it, so the name ends up looking silver-gray under headlights instead of glowing white.
Which would be the saddest possible outcome. He goes through all this, and the name doesn't even light up.
The name is the punchline. If the name doesn't work, the whole bit collapses. So I'd tell Daniel, find a heat press. Library makerspaces sometimes have them. Local t-shirt print shops will do a single press for a few bucks if you bring the cut vinyl and the garment. It's worth the extra step.
The full bill of materials for this project is a fluorescent toddler onesie, half a yard of sewn glass bead fabric, a spool of UV-resistant polyester thread, one sheet of reflective HTV, and access to a cutting machine and a heat press. Total cost? Maybe $40 to $50? And an afternoon of work.
The result is a garment that performs like safety gear but cannot be called safety gear. It'll reflect headlights, it'll make Ezra visible from 100 feet away, and it'll look absolutely perfect next to a toy forklift and a shipping container. But if you put it under a spectrophotometer and checked it against ANSI 1-7, it would fail on color, fail on stripe geometry, and fail on minimum reflective surface area.
Which brings us to the question Daniel didn't ask, but that's sitting underneath the whole thing. Is there any point to this beyond the joke? I think there is a point, actually. One's practical, one's bigger.
Give me the practical one first.
The practical one is that Daniel can build a vest that does the job even if it can't get the paperwork. The glass beads don't know they're on a non-certified garment. They'll reflect headlights exactly the same way. So for the actual use case, a one-year-old operating a toy forklift in a living room while relatives take photos, the thing works, the bit lands, Ezra's name lights up. That's a win.
The bigger point?
The bigger point is what this exercise forces you to notice about standards. ANSI 107 assumes a 50 percentile adult male torso. That assumption is so baked in that it's invisible, until you try to scale down and the entire geometry collapses. The standard doesn't say adults only. It just quietly makes children impossible.
It's not just high-vis vests. Car seats are designed around specific crash test dummies that model average-sized children at specific ages. But a kid at the 95th percentile for weight hits the limits of the standard's assumptions. Bike helmets are tested on head forms that don't represent every skull shape. Respirators fail fit tests on faces that fall outside the calibration range of the original panel of test subjects.
Daniel's absurd birthday project is actually a lens. The moment you try to make a safety product for a body the standard didn't imagine, you discover that safe and certifiably safe are different things, and the gap between them is full of people the standard didn't think to include.
Which means the real answer to, is there any point, is yes, because the exercise reveals that standards aren't physics. They're social agreements about whose bodies count as the default, and the default has edges.
Here's the recipe. Half a yard of Scotchlight 8, 9, 10, so on, about $25 if you can find stock. A fluorescent lime toddler t-shirt, not ANSI lime, but close enough to read. One sheet of scissor Easyweed reflective HTV, $8. UV-resistant polyester thread, zigzag stitch, X pattern across chest and back, waistband, heat press the name at 305 for 15 seconds, total cost under $50, total time an afternoon.
What you get is a vest that works but can't be certified, which, for a one-year-old's birthday party, is exactly what the bit requires. The joke is funnier because the certification is impossible.
The impossible certification is the joke.
It makes me wonder how many other standards have the same invisible cliff. Car seats are the obvious one. The crash test dummies represent specific percentiles, and if your kid is outside that envelope, you're trusting physics over certification without even knowing it.
The test head forms are based on a study from the 1970s of a few thousand white male military recruits. Every helmet on the market is optimized for that skull geometry.
Respirators. The fit test panel was calibrated decades ago, and face shapes that fall outside it simply can't get a certified seal. The standard doesn't say those faces don't deserve protection, it just doesn't see them.
That's the pattern Daniel stumbled into with a toy forklift. The edges of standards aren't marked. You only find them when you try to fit a body that wasn't in the room when the standard was written.
The question that sticks with me is, as more people DIY safety gear for these edge cases, kids, unusual body types, pets, niche applications, nobody's ever certified, does the gap between formal compliance and practical protection get wider?
I think it does. And the uncomfortable question underneath is whether a non-compliant vest is better than no vest at all. For Ezra operating a toy forklift at walking speed in the living room, the answer is obviously yes. The vest works, the bit lands, nobody's in danger. But the principle scales to situations that aren't funny.
A parent making a reflective vest for a kid who walks to the bus stop on an unlit road. A cyclist modifying a jacket because the certified options don't fit. The physics still works, the beads still bounce light back.
The certification just isn't there to back it up. And we've built a world where certification is the thing we trust, not the physics underneath it.
Which means Daniel's birthday project is either the dumbest engineering problem we've ever taken seriously, or the most revealing one.
It's both. That's what makes it a good prompt. Isra in his DIY Hy-Vees, name lit up, operating a toy forklift next to a shipping container. The image is absurd, but the absurdity is what got us to notice something real.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the early 1500s, a lighthouse keeper on Lake Baikal recorded that the seal fat used in his signal lamp produced a flame whose color shifted from yellow to pale blue depending on the proportion of freshwater seal oil to rendered omal fish oil, a chemical nuance he exploited to signal different messages to approaching vessels.
The man was running a two-tone maritime communication system with fish oil.
This has been My Weird Props. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, tell someone who's ever tried to buy something that doesn't exist. The website is myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back with more questions that sound ridiculous until they aren't.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Props, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.